There's been a theme to this first series of Track and Field. For most narratives we've told, they've always come back to one competition, one moment that has defined and shaped the careers for most European athletes in the last few years. Berlin 2018. We've had the crowd noise. Listen as it fades in under our narration. You might recognise it. From there, we've had a backdrop of commentary from a number of events. Nafi Tiam taking the heptathlon gold.
The gold medal going to Nafi Tiam at 6,816 points.
Mondo Duplantis making himself a marked man in the pole vault as an 18-year-old.
And oh my God, he goes clear. 6 metres and 5 centimetres.
And even younger Jakob Inge Britsen taking the European crown in the 1,500 and 5,000 metres when he was just 17.
But Jakob Inge Britsen, this sensational 17-year-old talent, they're gaining on him. Can they get there in the end? Wow, Jakob Inge Britsen just wins it.
It's going to be Jakob Inge Britsen coming through for a stunning and memorable double. Jakob Inge Britsen adds to his 1,500-metre title.
Even without a global pandemic postponing some events between the European Championships and the Olympic Games, the echoes of Berlin would have continued to be heard. Because it was the championship that defined so much. It captured the imagination of an adoring athletics fan base. And now, as we close out the series, we take our narrative full circle. We may have our eyes on Japan, Tokyo to be more specific, but before we get there, our minds are cast back to Berlin for one last time, and the race that has been watched on YouTube thousands of times and come to represent so much. Jakob Inge Britsen may have taken 1,500-metre victory in Berlin, but close on his tail that evening was Great Britain's Jake Whiteman. As he chased down the young Norwegian, it really added to the drama. It was he who helped turn the crowd's volume up a few decibels. It's pretty deafening, right? So, of course, our top production team will turn it down to protect your eardrums. But the athletes couldn't do that inside the Olympic Stadium. Their performance did the opposite as the atmosphere hit fever pitch. We know there isn't a crowd inside Tokyo's own Olympic venue this year, but you can bet that as Whiteman chases down Inge Britsen and his other rivals again, athletics fans will be screaming into their television sets until the climax. Because this is going to be middle distance running at its best. From European Athletics, this is Track and Field. I'm Peter Sanderson, your guide throughout this series as we hear the inside stories from some of Europe's leading athletes as they brace themselves for the biggest challenge of their lives, the Olympic Games. This is Chapter 8 of the Track and Field story, our final instalment of the current series. And now we speak to Jake Whiteman, the British runner who's been pushing Europe and the world's finest middle distance runners all the way in recent times. Maybe the Olympic Games will give him the medal he craves the most, but until he steps up to that line in Tokyo, it's Berlin that keeps flashing back.
That's probably one of the most enjoyable champs I think I've been to, just because Berlin was just a class place to have it. That stadium was like rocking most nights, and it felt like it was filled with genuine athletics fans that knew what they were watching. The big thing from like a British perspective was we put myself, Chris O'Hare and Charlie Grice all made the final. And then from the Norwegian side, all of the Ingebrigtsens made the final. So a lot of the chat before was that it's like Britain versus Norway. And I felt as though any one of myself, Chris and Charlie could have medalled. And at the time that any one of probably Henrik, Jakob and Philip could have medalled. And it was always probably going to be Philip that was seen as a danger at that point because Jakob was still so young.
As Jakob revealed to us himself, age didn't matter for him. However, injuries delivered a change of tactics on the spot as the race played out, meaning his moment with destiny came earlier than he and anyone else expected.
I don't know how to explain it, but it was unexpected even for me. I said going into the race and championship that I was going to win, but it's a whole different feeling actually winning, getting over the finish line first. compared to believing you're going to win or saying you're going to win. After a couple of minutes, I understood that I actually won the 800, which was my goal for my career, basically. So I was really, really happy.
And Jake was on his tail the whole way. The Team GB Scandinavian battle was on.
By the last lap, even at the bell, everyone was still there. And it ended up being, there was a shot where it's the three Ingebrigtsens and us three Brits pretty much occupying the first six spots, which is a pretty cool thing for, I hope, for like athletics fans in general, but British fans to be watching. And then even with 150 to go, everyone was still there. And there was a point where you kind of know, I think, with 200 to go in a race where you're going to have a shot at winning it or it's not going to be your day. And I felt good. So I was hoping that I had enough down the home straight. And Jakob just seemed like he was coming back to us because he'd got a tiny little gap on the rest of the field. So I was sure we were going to close him. And then the further down the home straight we got, he just didn't get caught. He was just so strong. And then Marcin, who'd been come from so far back, came past me to come second. And my immediate thought as we finished was that, oh, it was there to win. Like that was what I first thought. It was so close. But then if you look what Jakob's gone to done since, he's probably not lost. I don't think he's probably lost the European final. And that was the first of what was to be like an unreal few days when he went and won the 5K pretty soon after. So I look back on that and I think, like, Christ, that was a great race. And it set me, Jakob and Marcin up pretty well, because the next year in Doha at the Worlds, we were the top three Europeans as well. And I think that sort of championship experience and being able to do it when it matters on that sort of occasion is huge going forward, especially for myself, who I hadn't really got many medals. I got a Commonwealth medal that year, so a European medal to add was just something that I was pretty proud of.
Finishing third, Jake would medal. And while any athlete will tell you it's the top spot on the podium they're chasing, that they're not satisfied with anything else, Berlin still has a sense of romance that lingers.
The class thing was it's always nice when it's under floodlights as well, like we were that night. But they show the clip of that finishing straight pretty often when Jakob races. It's the margins and the changing of positions is what's exciting about it. It's that I don't think with 50 to go, you could have probably called who was going to be the top three. And if you ran that last 200 probably 10 times, you'd get pretty different outcomes almost every time, I think. But that's just racing. It's about getting it right when it matters and kind of keeping your composure in those situations, which I felt like I did that night.
There is more to this athlete than just one race, of course. To the indoctrinated, he's a middle distance runner who is seen as being a master tactician. He runs a race that can see him appear from nowhere to take victory, always loitering, always waiting for his moment to pounce and shock those around him. It's an approach that has been perfected after years of failure, leading to success.
My dad's always been big about if you're standing on the starting of a race, you've got to be on it to sort of win it. You don't want to be running to come that mid-pack. You want to actually be there to try and make an impact on the race and do something to try and influence it to get the win, which is something I feel like I try and do every time I race. It definitely comes with age. Like I've got a lot better at it. Like I say now, I generally don't make too many errors, and if I don't run as well as I hope, it's probably because I'm not quite as fit as I should be, or at the stage in the season, I'm not as fit as I will eventually be. But I think you kind of learn to relax, and that's not just before races, but also during races. I think when I was younger, especially when you're kind of starting to get through from juniors to seniors, that's the toughest bit, because it's pretty daunting racing guys that have been running for a lot longer than you, and it's overwhelming in a lot of circumstances. So I used to get a bit more nervous and feel like I had to get myself a bit more worked up before a race, whereas eventually I realised that was just doing nothing. The best outcome for me was to be going into it as relaxed as possible, save as much energy as possible, and then I felt like while I was racing I was relaxed, and then obviously if you're relaxed you're going to make the best decisions.
Jake's pragmatic. He takes influence from other leaders he observes from other sports. He listens to their wisdom. He adopts their mantras. And he tells himself that it's always too early to panic.
Which I think was a Roger Federer quote. And that's pretty key, I think, in all sports, especially in athletics. There's always been an opportunity to sort of come out of a box and get in the right position. You don't need to worry about that until as late in the race as possible. And I used to always end up running really, really wide to stop myself getting boxed in. And if you did the maths, I'm probably running like 1,500 and, I don't know, 30 metres or something like that. And that's a big difference and a big margin to give away. So I've just kind of learned that when I make a move, it needs to be decisive. It needs to be calculated enough that it's going to have a good outcome. It's brutal, especially middle distance stuff. It's all about how good you are at racing, especially when you get to the level now where everyone is pretty similar time-wise. It's all about who can make the best decisions. And I think a lot of that comes from making mistakes when you're younger. So I was never really scared to put myself out there and perhaps go from a little bit too early at the end of the race, die and get caught, just because even though it's disappointing at the time, you learn a lot from that. And that's one thing I'd always say to like younger athletes, is like, don't be afraid, just put yourself in a position where you're taking a risk, because one, that can lead to like huge rewards, like big PBs, you could win races you wouldn't expect to, but also like a bad outcome is almost as good as a good outcome in that situation. Like when you're young, there's no real pressure to have to get it right. It doesn't matter what you're doing at that age. It's all about trying to get to senior. So the quicker you can learn what you should and shouldn't do, the kind of better you're going to be able to start progressing through the sport and kind of minimise the chances of those mistakes happening.
With a personal best of 3:29, Jake has put himself in a great position to medal in Tokyo. And while the world's top 38 runners in the 1500 metres are all within a few seconds of each other, few have run faster than him in the past year or so. He knows matching that PB can deliver a gold medal, and his familiar approach to the tactical battle gives him an edge over most. That is, until Jakob Ingebrigtsen decides to throw it all out the window.
Well, you've got whatever Jakob chooses to do, changes it. But I think every single person probably this year has stepped up a little bit from last year. I ran quick in a year, which didn't really matter in the end. But to know that I've got that ability to be able to run out quick, because it could very well happen, is something that's pretty comforting. Like, I feel like if it went quick, I'd be okay. And obviously, if it went slow, my 800's good enough for me to be okay. The hardest bit is just getting through the rounds. That was tough. It's tough at any champs, like Europeans or Worlds. You've got to navigate those successfully because a lot can go wrong. So I don't think you can really think of the final until you get past the heat, get past the semi. And then there really is like a big opportunity for everyone that's there. You don't really realise how big a deal an Olympics is. Like, I've never been to one, but I just know that I've waited 5 years for this one to come, so I don't really want to waste the opportunity. I want to be able to know that I made the most of it, and if that ends up being a gold, ends up being a medal, or me just missing out, I want to know that everything I've done in the build-up has been as good as it could have been, and I gave as good an account as I could have of myself on the night. So I just hope that I can come the other side and come to the end of season and be pleased with the outcome, whatever.
Talk of making the most of the Olympics comes natural, as Jake missed out on making Team GB for the Rio Olympics in 2016. GB decided to send just two athletes to compete in the 1500 metres.
And then I was third at the trials, so like it was in my hands to try and run a standard, and I couldn't. I was balancing at uni finals at the same time, so I didn't quite get to probably race the race I wanted to, but it's not really much of an excuse. I thought I should have been able to do it. So the gutting thing is sitting at home, obviously watching guys in Rio, and like still being a fan of it, but there's that back thing in the mind where you don't really enjoy it as much because you hope that you were there. So I kind of wanted to make sure every year after that the one thing I did is just put it in my hands, so I haven't not run a standard every time. And fortunately for me, I've gone to each champ since, which Rio, if I didn't go, perhaps I wouldn't have got that sort of motivation and like desire for that to happen. But for me to finally get on the Tokyo team was more than anything just a big relief, because if something happened again this time when I didn't make it, it would have been like double sort of as tough to take, I think, because the way my career's lined up, this is a really good opportunity to be able to make the most of Olympic Games. So yeah, Rio was definitely a big motivation for sure.
That desire to compete in the Olympic Games stretches further back than Rio. Athletics is in Jake's blood. His parents were both competitive. His father is now a stadium announcer. And while most people were content to watch the Beijing Games from the comfort of their living rooms, Jake was there on the ground, soaking it all up.
So I actually went to watch Beijing. A lot of our family holidays, however sad this probably sounds to some people, but to us it was class, revolved around going to watch athletics. So I think our first ever champs we went to watch was Paris Worlds in 2003. We've been to like Europeans in Barcelona when in 2010. Yeah, went to watch Beijing. But I think my earliest memory, I can't remember too much of Sydney. I remember my dad going out there in 2000, but I was only six. Whereas Athens, watching Kelly do her double was a pretty big one, because we were athletics fans by then, and everyone obviously within Britain knew that Kelly was going to run well. So to see her do that double was pretty incredible. And I think especially as we hadn't had that much success for those previous years, because it was just a bit beyond the sort of co-Kramovet era, I think to get an athlete doing that is something so amazing. And hopefully again we can get someone try and do the same sort of thing these next few years. So I've not met Kelly. I've been lucky that so the funny one with Kram is that his son went to my school, So I've seen Steve come in to take training sessions of ours since I was, I don't know, 14 or so, I think. I've met Seb since I was a senior. I kind of got to know him, and one of the best things I have, which for me, I'd say if I was to try and emulate any of them, it would be Seb, just because the way he raced and the circumstances, he's coached by his dad, like went to Loughborough like me. He's the one that I'd most like to be like. And when I won in Oslo Diamond League in 2017, I got a letter through the post from him, which was handwritten, saying how well he thought I'd run. And for me, that was like a real special thing to receive, because it's kind of like just your idol sending you something, saying that they're impressed. Gave me a lot of confidence knowing that hopefully I could try and do the sort of thing he does. Since then, I've obviously had a lot to do with Crammy, because he comes on camps. Steve Ovett has got in contact sometimes through my dad about races, which if these guys are looking at what you're doing and impressed, it does really mean a lot.
And having a dad who's so well connected in athletic circles doesn't just mean nice messages from your heroes. It can help in other ways too, such as refining your talent and having a support bubble in Tokyo to help potentially deliver a gold medal.
He knows exactly what he's doing. He's not like a parent that hasn't got a clue about athletics. He knows exactly what you need to do for every sort of stage of development to get to the best level possible. Having him now, like, announcing is pretty cool, because he's always there at my meets. So, like, a lot of people don't get their coaches. I don't get my coaching warm-up when he's there. That's the one disadvantage. But knowing that he's around, that he's going to be in Tokyo because he's announcing, barely anyone will have a coach or even a parent out there, obviously. I'm pretty lucky with that. But he's done every single job in the sport. He's been an agent. He's done, like, the sports marketing side. Obviously, he's announced, he's coached, he's ran. So he knows, like, through and through, and he lives and breathes the sport.
This has been Track and Field. We'll return with another series as we pass the baton on to the next set of European stars. This episode was presented by myself, Peter Sanderson. Gary Hayes and I wrote the series together, while Gary is also our producer alongside Karina Vigo. Our consultant producers for this series are Kerry Levy, Nick Latworth and Jackie Ankerlin. Sound mixing is by Taylor Hayes, who also composed the Track and Field music. The podcast artwork and social content is produced by Matt Alabaster. Our thanks go to Christian Mills, Rob Faulkner, and everyone else involved at European Athletics for helping make this series a reality. If you'd like to know more about athletics, visit the website european-athletics.com. Please rate and review Track and Field wherever you listen, as it helps make the series more visible. And if you've enjoyed this episode, visit highway61.media for more podcasts just like this one. That's HWY61.media. Or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at HWY61_podcasts. This has been another Highway 61 production.